Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. And the tax man slash psychic should be on any minute here. I got a funny story about the tax man, actually. We talked a couple weeks ago about Kimbo Slice and how he's kind of an overrated heavyweight who's lucky to still be undefeated. Well, we got a couple stories of weird heavyweight fights this week. But one of them involves a guy, I don't think they've fought yet. Well, they obviously haven't because both of them are undefeated. But they talked about having them fight. And it never came to pass, but Ray had former defensive end for the Vikings. Had a fight this weekend.
He did.
Wasn't actually a fight, actually, if you consider the outcome. But not only did he have a fight as a 3-0 fighter right now, he's called out Vitaly and Vladimir Klitschko. Says he's ready to smash either one of them. But after reviewing the videos of the February 9th fight at the Red River Campgrounds or Fairgrounds in West Fargo, North Dakota, State Boxing Commissioner Al Yeager announced that he suspended Nicholas TurboTax Capes indefinitely. And if you think that nickname is bad, what do you get to one of his other opponents? Capes of Cedar Falls, Iowa, was a last-second replacement, literally, last second. But he didn't last a minute in the fight. He hit the deck 13 seconds into the first round after Edwards missed with a right uppercut. Videos of the fight show no evidence of Edwards ever landing a punch. And there was no confusing Nicholas Capes with Nicholas Cage on a dive that was not even well performed. And I've seen the video, and it's the obvious miss. He just flops down face first on the ground after it. The promoter, Corey Rapids, who put together the last-second matchup, said just before the fight was scheduled to start, the original opponent dropped out. Rapix said Capes, who was only 5'9", compared with the 6'4", 270-pound Edwards, seemed eager, and we all expected him to try. Edwards began his boxing career on May 20th, 2011, by defeating T.J. Gibson in a four-round unanimous decision at the Grand Casino in Hinckley, Minnesota. On January 25th of this year, Edward returned to the Grand Casino and knocked out Corey Spare Tire Briggs.
Yeah.
How about that for a boxing nickname?
That's his real name?
That's his real nickname, boxing nickname. And it must be a monster truck tire because it says Briggs is reported to be in the 600-pound neighborhood.
What?
600 pounds of pure muscle.
Man. I remember when WWE, they had Yokozuna wrestling back about, I guess, 20 or so years ago, 15, 20 years ago. And he stood up, he was like, 480 to 500 pounds. And for a big guy, he was pretty agile. But then when he got up in like a 600 and some pound and 700 pound range, he would walk to the ring and he was just completely out of breath. He was just like standing in the corner and be huffing and puffing. He fell because he knows how long. I mean, not you know, the healthiest thing to do out there.
Right. How about that guy Earthquake? Remember that dude?
He actually was a legitimate senior wrestler. John Tenta, his name was. And he was about 480. And he actually, Nick Mazuma passed away in 2000. They said he was close to 800 pounds. And, he had a heart attack. Actually, John Penta Earthquake died probably about 6 years ago from bladder cancer.
Ah. That's weird. That was a big heavyweight debacle. The other one was... go figure, the guy who gives another black eye to boxing is from a rugby team called the All Blacks in New Zealand, I think. I'm not sure, but Sonny Bill Williams, goes by SBW. He's just one of those guys who just bounced into the boxing game from another sport, thought he could do it. And he went up against Francois Botha, the, what is it, the White Buffalo? Is that what they call him? Well, he, Botha looked like he was doing a lot of holding and hitting in the fight. I think he actually got a point taken away from him. And he was, of course, down on points at the eighth round, and they stopped it. Now, leading up to the fight, there was several people talking about the fight, mentioning 12 rounds, including Sonny Bill Williams. And he mentioned a few times in the press conferences up to the fight that you know, he didn't think Francois Botha would last 12 rounds. Both actually is the clip fight, talking to the ring announcer or whoever, somebody with a microphone, and bitching about how it was supposed to be 12 rounds, and he didn't know it was only going to go 10. But they stopped it after 10 rounds, and Sonny Bill Williams won the fight. Then, after the fight, it was announced that Botha had tested positive for phentermine and something else. I'm trying to find the story here. I didn't get the exact. But phentermine, it's one of those things you can get right on the internet. I know because I used to get a lot of spam on UnlimitedFightNews.com from people trying to sell phentermine. And I think it's like ephedra, something like ephedra. Well, anyway, here is it. Here it is. He submitted a urine sample on Tuesday last week, and it revealed the presence of phentermine, a banned stimulant. It also showed traces of benzodiazepine, a Valium-type product. And we talked about this with Forrest Griffin, who got tested positive for Valium, and we didn't hear about it until like 6 weeks later, and he had no suspension. But Australian National Boxing Federation committee member John Hogg cast doubt on the report, telling Australia News Limited that there were no compulsory drug tests required for boxers in Queensland. And he had never heard of the Australian sports anti-doping team spot testing fighters in the state. So kind of sounds a little fishy there, why they would do that to Botha, as if they knew they were going to do this 10-round switcheroo, bait and switch. John Hogg said, I would think I would have heard about an ADA testing Botha or Sonny Bill because they have never showed up to boxing gyms in Queensland or on Fight Night. Witnesses who saw Botha in his dressing room before the fights told the Sydney Morning Herald he was relaxed and lying on the floor as Williams entered the ring first. Just checking on Tom. Still not here. We'll get him on the click in button. A leading sports doctor told the Sydney Morning Herald that phentermine and benzodiazepine have opposing effects. Well, obviously, if it's a stimulant and benzodiazepine is a Valium type thing, that would have different effects. One puts you to sleep, one keeps you awake. Phentermine is part of the Go Fast group, says this doctor. As I call them, which is a similar category to all of the adrenaline and amphetamines, anything that is a stimulant that keeps you awake and produces. Before the drug revelation, Nasser said Williams was flattered by an approach from David Tua's camp, but a rematch with Botha may be the more realistic prospect. Williams tweeted he was willing to get back into the ring with the South African boxer. After, God willing, having a good footy season, I'll gladly rematch Mr. Botha, even in South Africa, Williams wrote on Twitter. Williams' win over Botha in Brisbane was tarnished by allegations of poor sportsmanship amid confusion surrounding the length of the bout. Nasser said both camps knew the fight was intended for 10 rounds, though that was contradicted by Williams in the build-up to the bout. I think his last four or five fights went the distance, Williams said on Thursday. He'll do 12 rounds pretty easy. That was reinforced at the pre-fight weigh-in where the boxer's introduction was prefaced by the announcement that the fight was set for 12 times 3-minute rounds. at the pre-fight weigh-in, it says 12 three-minute rounds. So that's pretty close to fight time. Nasser insisted that Boxing Queensland dictated the bout was set for 10 rounds. He said both a knew this and his protestations were for the promotion of the fight and possible rematch. The commission has said that both managers agreed it was 10 rounds before the fight. Francois Both is an A-class promoter, and I commend him. I think he was great in every sense, and he was even greater after the fight. He might be able to talk himself into a rematch, though the fight was totally one-sided. He's been doing a remarkable job. And Williams wrote on Twitter that Boxing Queensland had acknowledged to both parties the fight was supposed to be 10 rounds. He also said he had received a congratulatory phone call from the World Boxing Association. And to his promoter, David Higgins, told the Herald on Sunday, Williams should accept to restore credibility to the tarnished sport. Even an aging Tua would provide a balance for the former All Black. Williams will have to wait until the conclusion of his commitments with the Sydney Roosters. So he used to play for the All Blacks, now he plays for the Sydney Roosters. And whether Williams will be allowed to fight again in Brisbane remains to be seen. Boxing Queensland would not return calls, but an unnamed official told the Sunday Mail that crisis talks will be held to curtail Nasser's future promotions. And this has actually made the rounds. It's been in the alerts for boxing just about every day. Guy on boxing, and of course, you know, swirling controversy around this. And it's legitimate controversy because if you watch the clips of the fight, Sonny Bill Williams was really struggling going into the 10th round, or at the end of the 10th round. Both was really fighting fair, but he was fighting effectively. He was hitting on the clinch a lot, but he was staggering Williams at the end of it. And if it had gone 12 and Williams couldn't recover, then he probably would have lost the fight. And as Williams even said before the fight with Justin Fred, he was even convinced that Botha could definitely go 12 rounds, no problem, even on a value. So it's interesting for sure, but I just don't know. I don't know if you could call it a real black eye in the sport. I mean, it's kind of a sideshow to begin with. Guy who has just a few wins here and there, fighting a guy career out of it, and he's a little bit old. He still do, but it is what it is. What's your good boxing news? I know you have some.
Well, let's see. I mean, well, let me first talk about from the amateur side of the sport. From this past weekend, I went up to the alma mater, Lock Haven University, big thumbs up to Haven. And, for the annual boxing show, I don't even know what number we're on now. Gotta be something like, you figure, I think 1998 was the 21st annual show, if I wasn't mistaken. And, so I guess 36 shows. Not too bad. Dr. Cox was there. Got to see him, got to say hello to him. Sadly, he lost his wife, Glenda, over the summer. We had posted something about that on our, Fighting's Unlimited page. But he was there, and, he seemed in pretty good spirits. And I thought it was a good show. They really did this year, which was a nice little touch, was they had a lot of the former fighters get up there to present medalists. I was paired with an old teammate of mine, Jason Fletcher, who was the 1996 national champion. And she just gave out the medals to the female bout. And the one young lady from Lock Haven that lost, she had a great first round, and she got pretty tired. I thought the other girl on the fight, my dad and a few other people thought the Lock Haven girl won. I also had a nice chance to talk to the one kid, he was a sophomore. And last year, he got beat up there pretty good. And I was actually surprised he kept fighting. I mean, he got a butt kicked. But he really was improving, and he ended up fighting in, like, a featured bout, which I was a little bit surprised about. But, you know, he held his own. He lost, but he held his own. I was talking to him afterwards, you know, just giving him some pointers. And the one thing he said was, you know, and I remember the head physician's wife, who's been involved with the team since I was there. She was like, he's such a nice kid. He's like a naive kid almost. Very trusting. And I was talking to him afterwards, and he was like, it takes me about a round or two to really get my adrenaline going. He's like, when I first started, I was like, I don't want to hurt nobody or whatever. I'm like, I'm thinking, well, should you be boxing? And then the one thing I wanted to tell him, you know, or I told him, was you have to, you know, use, you know, a lot of movement concentration. And the one fighter I always think about was, when, remember when I first started doing the show, and I want to actually dedicate the time to revisit this topic. I want to do more research on it. We talked about that fighter, Tim Doc Anderson, who the promoter was messing with, Rick Parker, and they were drugging him. And then and Tim Anderson killed the promoter and was in jail. Well, his roommate, whose name I cannot remember, like Jim something, he came out and said, Tim should not have been a fighter. He was a great athlete, and he was an entertainer. You know, he would come out there, and he would do stuff to get the crowd involved. But he was too nice of a guy to be a boxer. He said, for him to box, he would literally, for 2 days before the fight, have to stare at walls almost and mentally psych himself up to do it. And as I was telling this kid, Adam, from Lock Haven, I said, well, what you got to do is you got to prepare yourself mentally. You know, and Rich, I'll do it this way. You know, say you and I, you know, matched up and we had to fight. Say you were my opponent at the 98 Lock Haven show instead of Michael Jordan. I didn't know you from a can of paint. You know, I didn't know Michael Jordan paint until we lined up to shake hands. Well, how are you going to get pissed off at a person and want to knock their teeth out when you don't even know what they look like? What you got to do is you got to prepare yourself mentally when you're saying, you know what, this guy is coming in my house, and he wants to knock me out and embarrass me in front of my friends and my family the very last time I'm going to be here? Oh, fuck him. I'm going to knock his ass out now. And you think of that. Or now, going to the Nationals. Just say, for example, you and I met in the finals. I still never really didn't know you. We never spoke. Well, here's my thing. You know, I'm a senior. And after this year, I'm done. And, you know, this guy wants to stop me from getting my national title. I got screwed out of the national title the 1 year. This is my last chance. If I get screwed this year, if I lose this year, I ain't got another shot at it. You actually develop an anger almost inside yourself. So you don't take sitting there saying, I got to get punched in the mouth 10 times before I get pissed off.
Well, fortunately for me, I had a little bit of help in both my regional fight to get to Nationals and then my first fight in Nationals. And I didn't really have an excuse to hate the kid, but if two of the kid's own teammates tell me how to beat him, I think he's worth hating. I didn't really hate him. No, I didn't. And then, you know, the regional match, the kid beat the shit out of me at the scrimmage at Annapolis the first time I fought under the VMI banner. So I had an excuse to be, you know, wanting revenge at least. But I don't think I ever really went in the ring pissed off. I wasn't nice to the point where I would let somebody walk all over me, but I don't remember ever going into the ring completely pissed off. Maybe a little psyched up, but not pissed off. I think it's your judgment a little bit if you get too angry going in.
Yeah, and that's me. I mean, because I consider myself a pretty easygoing. I was joking around with a friend of mine just the other day. And we're going out tomorrow night. His son just got home from boot camp. You know, we just, you know, graduated the Marines, a Marine boot camp. So we're taking him out to dinner before he goes for advanced training on Monday. So, and a lot of times I'll go to a place and I'm going to wear one of my big goofy-looking hats and I'll wear beads around tomorrow night. And I'll wear these blinged-out shutter shades and all that, and I'll have the big boxing glove earring. And people look at me and go, look at this dope, or look at this dork, whatever. When I'm with my friends, I'm really laid back and happy-go-lucky because I'm having a good time. If I wasn't going to have a good time, then these guys wouldn't be my friends. I wouldn't want to spend time with them. Now, about a few months ago, we were out one night, and I was in the mood for whatever reason. And we were at this little sports bar, and they had the UFC pay-per-view on. So you have a lot of UFC fans there. And I'm there. I'm wearing my Team Tornado boxing jacket. I have it hanging on the one chair. My friend has his jacket on top of mine. And he comes in. He goes, yo, man. He goes, there's this guy outside just running his mouth. And I'm like, about what? He goes, boxing, MMA is shit. And boxing sucks. It's going to kill boxing. I can't wait till boxing, completely gone. My friend's like, yo, buddy, I happen to disagree with you. And then and I heard it. I said, Mike, pick up your jacket. Picked it up. Put mine on top of his. So it was like literally facing this kid. So now if he wants to say something, he's going to say it to me. And then as I'm sitting there, and I look over at my friends Mike and Steve, and I see him like whisper it. I'm like, what? And they're like, nothing. I said, no, there's not nothing. You look at me and you're saying something. What's going on? They're like, we didn't want to tell you. But this walked by, because I had like this red, white, and green hat on, and he walked by and he saw my jacket and everything. He looked at me, he shook his head like, and he kind of gave like a disdainful look. And I said, I was in a bitchy mood that night. So when the guy walked back in, I'm like, dude, there he is. And I'm like, oh, this fucking asshole. I pointed at him. I'm like, you're a piece of shit. And the guy didn't know what to say. They left. and so my friends always say, I might have the fun exterior and the goofy exterior. Don't make me flip the switch. It's like the old great show from the 1970s and the 1980s, The Incredible Hulk, my favorite show growing up. Don't make me angry. You would not like me when I'm angry.
That is the one advantage, I think, of being pissed off going into a fight, is that it does sometimes flip the switch where you're not even aware of your actions.
The thing is that you've got to be smart. Now, certain guys could fight pissed off and do better. Perfect example is Vinny Pazienza. He used to, punch himself and be when they have to give the instructions, he'd be almost shoving the guy out of the way. He fought better when he was pissed off. Other guys lose their composure. The only time I ever really let a crowd affect my composure, as I told you before, was out in Reno against Brian Carr, because that's when the one guy looked at me and said, I hope you die tonight. And then I looked at him, I kind of made a gesture at him. And then I came out there and said, I'm going to embarrass this guy in front of all his home crowd now. I want to beat him so bad to shut them up. And that got me into a slugfest with a bigger guy when I would have been better served to use movement boxing them than to put both my hands on them. But wait, I've got a surprise for you. I was at the Lock Haven show the other night, and like I said, I saw Jason Pletcher, who was my old teammate. He and I were paired together to give out medals. It was nice to be in the ring looking up, where all my friends used to sit, and I was just looking up there, and I could still see them. And so we're in there, and there was a bunch of other alumni, and we're laughing and we're joking, and I talked to Coach Dennis Garner from Mansfield. He presented me with my first medal after my first win back in January of 95. I just sent him that picture. I saw Dr. Cox, Coach Cooper, all a bunch of the LHU guys. Then I saw a guy that I have not seen in over 10 years, Bill Rabel from Penn State. And he came over, and I was like, oh, my God, it's Bill. I haven't seen Bill. It's funny because, Bill was coach from Penn State, but he was a prankster kind of guy. Like the year I killed myself to make 165, we had an electronic scale. And 165.0 or less. And I'm killing myself to make this weight. And we're coming up to Penn State from Lock Haven. I'm spitting in the cup. I have no spit left. I stripped down completely naked. All I had on that scale was what God gave me when I was born. Up on that scale, and I see more, and the digits are going up. 160, 162, 165, 170, 174, 180, 186. And I'm sitting there like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm almost hallucinating at this point. from being so dehydrated, and there's Bill Rabel with his foot on the scale behind me, smiling at me. we had a mutual respect for each other. That the following year, when I went to that show in Reno, the Fight Ryan car, Dr. Cox couldn't go. I went out with Bill Rabel, and he worked my corner. So he worked my corner on a Saturday against Brian Carr. We fly back the following Saturday. I'm fighting your boy Jesse Bond with Bill in the corner against me. And so we laughed at everything, and I mentioned you, actually, as in how we did the show together. And he goes, "Oh yeah, I remember him." He goes, "My boy Jesse beat the living shit out of him because Rich was trying to hold the whole fight."
What? He was elbowing me. I got pissed at the ref.
He said you were elbowing him.
Oh, man. What a punk.
You know I'm messing with you, right?
What did he say? For real?
No, he just laughed. Because I just mentioned that, you know, we do the show together and how we almost fought in the Nationals. And, you know, and I mentioned that you did fight Jesse. That was about it. I mean, I don't even know if he remembers Jesse. He just remembered his knee because he had to work corners against me for 4 straight years and then work my corner along doing like the Apollo Creed thing here. But it was nice. It was a good show afterwards. All the alumni got together, even down in the Sons of Italy. And, you know, I bring up a couple things I can get in the Philadelphia area that they don't get in Lock Haven. We got, like, what they call tomato pie. I don't know if you're familiar with that up in the New England area, but it's like almost like a cold pizza. And it's got like, you know, I have to send you a picture of it. It's really good. They don't get them up in Lock Haven. So I actually get up in the wing to present a medal. I'm standing there. I got the silver medal in my hand. I'm about to give it out. And there's the one guy from the Italian club sitting at the table, ringside. Kind of cow. Did you bring the tomato pies? Silver. All right. We knew we could count on you. But no, it was a great time, and, you know, it's good to be able to, you know, to get together, relive old war stories. Some of the pictures, if you go on my Facebook page and I post it, I have a picture with Dave Mockimer on there. He was a former national champion for Lock Haven. Then he was a pretty good amateur referee. He actually refereed my fight against Michael Jordan, my last fight at home. Then I have a picture with a gentleman by the name of Tim Freymeyer. And he was there, also a Lock Haven boxer in the 80s. And they even made fun of him. After my fight with Jordan, he was the guy presenting the medal. And he was, at the time, I don't know if anybody has been since, but the only 4-time national runner-up silver medalist in college boxing history. Went to the Nationals every year, made it to the finals every year, and lost every year.
Thanks. Well, anyway, I want to let everybody know we got Tom on the line. You might have heard him chuckle.
I'll have to give my 2 cents worth on this whole idea about do you have to be mad to get in there. And I just think that you bring your personality into the fight because I've seen guys that are just cold as ice and just going in just like technicians just to do a job. And then there's other guys like Tony was saying about Vinny, you know, just beating himself in the head, yelling and screaming. And I think that, you know, you just go with what you got, because if you try to change your personality too much, I don't think it's going to work too well. I mean, that's kind of my unscientific observation here on things. But I do think that your personality comes out.
One person I was going to mention in that whole topic was George Foreman. When he came back and was trying to make a run at the title again, I can always remember he would be interviewed after a loss, a tight loss for a belt, and they would ask him questions, and he would be saying, "Yeah, I really felt bad for the guy. I didn't want to hurt him." From a preacher, you know, it makes sense. You know, you actually believed him, but a lot of people would say that and not really mean it, just want to make excuses for a loss. But that kind of reminded me of him, and then in my situations, I mean, I don't even know if I was really just mad or just, you know, like the point of the switch flipping, you know, it's like you lose all emotion. You just go to pure instinct. It's half of the time it's not even anger. It's just you like you said, you're going to do a job all of a sudden that you weren't going to do 2 minutes ago, but all of a sudden your brain is focused on going to pure instinct.
Yeah, well, you know, George Foreman is such an enigma because I remember in his first incarnation, was not really a matter, is he going to win, is how long would his opponent be in the hospital? And, you know, will he get him out in the first or second round? I mean, he was just, that night when he fought Ken Norton down in Caracas, Venezuela, he was a savage killer. Whew! You know, and so here you have a guy going in with all that rage and anger and being a success, but yet had bad cardio as a result of it, and I think that really cost him in the Rumble in the Jungle. Then he comes back 10 years later, a far more relaxed guy. So he's really an enigma in that sense. But, I look at a guy like when Kelly Pavlik was in his prime. He was the kind of guy that, you know, they'd interview him after the fight, and he almost sounded like he had just punched out or he completed a plumbing job or something. I said, well, you know, we had to run this pipe around the corner, and then we ran into a little trouble, so I had to get another wrench. And, you know, I mean, that's what he came across like, and it worked good for him. And then you get these guys. I don't understand this. Some of them will win, like a James Toney, and they're still angry in the interview. They're still ranting and raving, you know. So it kind of works both ways.
In MMA, it's in MMA, you get a couple guys, well, maybe not anymore because Rampage Jackson is leaving, but he comes to mind as one of those guys that always seems to come in angry and pissed off, and that didn't serve him well in his last fight in the UFC there. And then the other guy I think of is Diego Sanchez. He probably has the meanest mean mug in the history of MMA.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He just looks angry when he starts a fight. And the Diaz brothers, they always have a mean look on their face when they start fights. Even though I've seen Nick Diaz do some pretty respectful things, like when he fought Frank Shamrock and made him get up after the fight and helped him up.
Yeah.
Despite their bad blood. But
that is just one more quick thing, you know, that I know a lot of my trainers always said, well, try to keep a poker face. Well, there was a lightweight, and he fought against Ray Mancini. I can't think of his name, begin with the E, but he was the kind of guy that when he would get hit, it was like, oh, how could you do this to me? You know, and yet the guy became a world champ. So it just seems to take all kinds.
Yeah, and another thing I just thought of is Overeem. I remember how pissed Overeem got at the end of the round before he got knocked out.
Yeah.
Sometimes anger can work against you in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Anger can work against you big time, you know. And I'll give you a perfect example. We were just talking. I mentioned him, then Tom mentioned him again. Then he passed. And one of the fights my dad took me to back in 1996, Rich, we still laugh about this fight because of Vinny's recollection of it, was this fight with Dana Rosenblatt.
He's not so dangerous.
He ain't so dangerous no more.
Douchebag.
And then he called him a douchebag. You get all fired up. But Vinny came into that ring. I remember where we were sitting at that fight. We were in the upper level, right over the aisle where the guys were walking out. And Dana came out, and, you know, he was just, hey, I'm here for a boxing match, you know. Came in the ring, he's wearing his robe, ready to go, you know, no emotion on his face. Vinny came out, he's got freaking war paint on, and he's punching himself in the face, shaking the ropes like the Ultimate Warrior. You know, it looks like he's about to, you know, go through God knows what. He's in the zone. Well, Dana's beating him over the first three rounds. He's got his eyes swollen shut, Vinny's nose was bleeding. Dana's kicking his ass. Well, Vinny starts talking to him, dropping his hands, sticking his chin out, and talking to him. And I remember I had the binoculars, and Vinny's back was to me, and Dana was face, and Dana dropped his hands and started talking back. And I remember turning to Dad and saying, he's getting pissed off. Mm-hmm. Fourth round comes up, and now Dana is out of his game plan, walks right into a big Overeem right, and next thing you know, down he goes. And
I remember Sean O'Grady, yeah, Sean O'Grady called him Dana Rosen Splat that night.
Yeah.
Rosen
Splat. That's funny. Yeah, when we had Vinny on the show a while back, his exact words were, "Oh, Dana, he ain't so dangerous. He's an effing douchebag."
Vinny's whole thing was like, he hated everyone. He was going to fight you, he hated you. And if he didn't hate you, he said he would drink like a cappuccino to get all, like, caffeine fired up. And I remember, like, and I asked him about three specific fighters that he had memorable feuds with, you know, personal feuds. One of them being Greg Haugen, because, you know, they had a big war of words. But then you come to find out later that, you know, Greg Haugen had to exchange with everybody. I'm reading the book on Ray Boom Boom Mancini right now, and I was reading about when him and Haugen fought, and, like, how Haugen was, like, you know, mocked him, and then, like, you know, taunting Mancini's family at ringside. And they said, you know, he was, like, even Al Bernstein said during the commentary, his look is, like, demonic, you know? And I know, because of his personality, obviously I'm Facebook friends with Vinny, and, you know, sometimes we'll message each other or post shit on each other's walls. And one time he had mentioned about one of the times recently, he's aged, I don't know if he still is, but, you know, a lot of people were suddenly, like, posted on that status, "Hey, Vinny, congratulations," and that. Then Haugen pops in on there, because I guess they're Facebook friends of all things, and he goes, "Oh, when are you going to have some little Dago babies?" And I'm like, dude, that was kind of uncalled for. And then Paz, he ends it. Vinny Paz, as he likes to be called now, he goes back in and he goes, "Hey, Haugen," but he spells it wrong, Howgon or something. He goes, "Don't ever forget, 2 out of 3. Don't ever forget, 2 out of 3. But I asked him, I said, you know, about, you know, three of his memorable feuds. I said, "You had the Haugen one." And I said, "I remember one time before your third fight, there was talk about you two, like, almost getting in a brawl in the bathroom before the fight." And he goes, "Well," he goes, "we're kind of cordial now." I said, "Okay, that's cool." And then I said, "Another guy you had a pretty, jawing with before you fought was Roberto Duran." And he goes, "Next thing I know, Duran's in your corner for your last fight." He goes, "You know what?" He goes, "Me and Roberto, yeah, when we were going to fight, you're right, we were at each other's throats. We became friends." He goes, "I came to a 50th birthday party. He and I became friends." And that was pretty cool. And I said, "What about Dana Rosa, buddy?" He goes, "Fuck him."
I met Roberto Duran out in Vegas at one of the Cosmopolitan fights, and he had a big bodyguard with him. And he was taking all the paperwork that anybody tried to give him. I tried to get him on my radio show here, and gave the bodyguard a business card. But you could tell Roberto still doesn't even have any clue about how to speak the English language. Nodding the whole time, and you could tell he didn't understand a word I was saying. But then when we had the Rocky Marciano celebration down there, when Vinny Paz was out there in the audience, I was looking out when they were playing the national anthem, and Vinny Paz was the only one who didn't take his hat off. So I said to my friend who was with me, I said, I think that's Roberto Duran out there. I saw him from a distance, but that was Vinny. But anyway, we got a lot of UFC news to talk about, and I mentioned Tom the Tax Man earlier, and I bet he can appreciate loopholes, right?
There you go.
Very important to the tax game. Well, the UFC found a loophole recently thanks to a decision in New York State related to their big lawsuit against the states to try to get events staged there. And the law hasn't necessarily changed yet, but apparently the judge agreed on some level that they can have fights there. They just have to have a third-party organization that's grandfathered into the 1997 law to get one of their shows greenlit. And the one mentioned in this article is the World Kickboxing Academy. And as we know, the UFC hates to co-promote, but if it means getting into New York State, I bet they will in a heartbeat. And I think the only reason they didn't co-promote in the past was because the only one who wanted to co-promote with them and gave them kind of a carrot on a stick to do so was M1 when Fedor Emelianenko was trying to sign a contract with the UFC. And M1, who managed him at the time, said that they wouldn't do it unless M1 would be co-promoted with them. And that's why M1 and Strikeforce joined forces after the fact there. So it seems like the date at Madison Square Garden I wanted to have by December of 2013 may be a possibility now. Because I think they would easily be able to find somebody willing to be part of the grandfathered situation there to get them into the UFC, get the UFC into New York. And speaking of Emelianenko, Randy the Natural Couture has been in the news a lot lately this week. I was trying to get to this story last week, but we got cut off. Blog Talk Radio hung up on us. Instead of the other way around. It's very weird. Never had that happen. But anyway, Randy Couture just kind of made the UFC and Dana White shit list for moving over to Bellator in their reality show. And he's, I don't know if it's going to be against, but he's going to be coaching with Frank Shamrock. I have situations where the coaches are going to fight each other. It's not going to be like that, like the UFC. So. But it's interesting, and basically Dana White was pissed because Randy had one more show with Fox that he was supposed to commentate, and he ducked out on it, and apparently didn't ever talk to Dana White personally on the phone. He just texted him with the news when it happened and sort of denied there was any negotiations going on when there were negotiations going on with Bellator. But now it's come out that Randy wanted to stay with the UFC, but the company didn't offer him anything significant enough to keep him interested. His exact quotes were, "I've been trying for a year and a half since I retired to get some sort of significant position with the company and stay with the company. They threw me the 4 Fox episodes a year and acted like they were doing me a favor doing that. I mean, it is what it is," Couture told Knockout Radio. Couture feels the relationship parent company Zuffa LLC began to sour during their battle over ancillary rights. "When they signed on to take over the brand," said Couture, "I had new management that understood ancillary rights were and all those things, and we fought to maintain control of my ancillary rights, my image, all those things. I'm one of the few fighters that's in a position to have all those things intact still. That started off the relationship with Zuffa on the wrong foot. And I'm not sure exactly what ancillary rights mean, but I'm pretty sure that's his ability to work with other promotions while he's working with the UFC," which was part of his contract from what he explains later in this piece. But he basically says, "So things are what they are, and I'm doing what's best for me, what's best for my brand, and all the things that I think are important to me, which is the sport and the athletes, and that hasn't always been in line with what was best for Zuffa and Dana White and the guys in charge there. A deal with the UFC would not have prevented him from doing television with Spike TV or anyone else. A deal with the UFC would have still allowed me to do television stuff and movie stuff with whomever. I think obviously the biggest issue now is Dana sees or feels like I am working with his competitor in Bellator Viacom, and I understand there's a fine line there, but there is still a distinction. It doesn't matter. There was no deal with the Zuffa. They didn't offer me a position. They didn't really offer me anything significant." So he's moving on, and he says he won't go to the point where he advises fighters not to sign with them. "I'm not going to do that. It's still one of the best promotions in the sport on the planet. There's still a ton of market value in fighting with that promotion, and I'm not going to steer anybody away from anything. Guys have to go where the course of their careers lead them, and I don't harbor those kinds of feelings. I'm not that type of person. Unfortunately, I don't think Dana can say the same thing, but I've got to be sure about it." And that's kind of interesting because he's got a son, Ryan Couture, who's followed his footsteps and is actually signed to the UFC. And Dana White actually personally called Ryan and told him that his father's feud with the UFC would have nothing to do with his contract. And the only thing that would potentially be a sort of bone of contention there is Dana White has said that Randy is now not even allowed to buy a ticket and go to a UFC fight. I don't know how they would enforce that.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. That's the first thing that popped into my mind.
Because if they're going to enforce that, I would think that Randy's going to have cameras on him when it happens, and they escort him out, and it's going to make the UFC look really bad. And there's a lawsuit there, I would think. You know, how do you not even let somebody in an arena if he hasn't made any, you know, physical threats or anything to justify that? But Ryan obviously would love to have Randy in his corner. I mean, he trains at Extreme Couture, so the only good thing about it for Ryan, he mentioned in an interview recently, was that maybe it will help in the respect of him being separated from his father. You know, he's being known across the world, across MMA now, as the son of Randy Couture, you know, and the only good thing about this is that it will physically separate the two of them. So there won't be so much talk about him just being the son of Randy Couture. He'll be able to make a name for himself, basically. But he's not going to fight about it. He's not going to make a big stink about having his father down to it. It's one of those stories. And our buddy over at the Takedown Radio had a show first. I haven't listened to it yet, but I definitely will. Possible. I told Tony earlier, I think it was before you got on, Tom, that unfortunately it seems like there's a lot of bad news in boxing lately this week. But one of the stories coming out is Michael Katsidis. I don't know if any of you guys heard this. He's retiring, or likely
really?
Retire. He's pulled out of a fight with Filipino Wang Haya in Melbourne on February 21st. 32 years old, and it's because of medical issues, but he hasn't really announced what those medical issues were. I doubt it's anything fatal. It doesn't sound like it's any kind of fatal cure or anything like that, because he's talking about getting involved in boxing on in another capacity. So I'm thinking it's going to be some kind of brain injury. Might be, you know, early onset Parkinson's, or you know, too many concussions. But basically, he says today they're still doing second opinions on some medical reports, so we are not in a position to really comment fully about any further information about his future. But he was based overseas for years and returned to Australia full time in 2012, and recently linked with trainer Johnny Lewis. He's probably one of the most exciting world-class Australian-born boxers of the last decade. His record stands at 26 and 23 KOs. And one of his last big fights was against Juan Manuel Marquez, less than 2 months after his brother, Stathy Katsidis, in October of 2010. And he bravely went ahead with the fight against after the death and knocked the Mexican superstar down before being stopped in the 10th round. And unfortunately, he lost 3 of his next 4 fights, 2 of them for interim title. And his only win came from Mexican Michael Lozada in his first fight back in Australia in over 5 years. As an amateur, he represented Australia at the 2000 Olympics before having his first professional bout the following year. And he won his first 23 paid fights and earned national and regional titles despite an enforced 8-month layoff due to an assault conviction in 2002. Katsidis won his first WBO interim title with a 5th-round stoppage of England's Graham Earl in what was widely considered to be the most exciting fight of 2007. And he suffered his first professional losses to Joel Casamayor and Juan Diaz in 2008. But won his second WBO strap in 2009 with a split points win over Vicente Beto. And could remain in the boxing industry in some capacity if he was forced to quit the ring. And he would probably prefer to work in an advisory role with fighters rather than be a full-time coach. And that media work was another option for the articulate and presentable Queenslander. So there you have it. Cetus is out. Something else?
No. That's a good thing. I'd like to see this. very exciting fighter, but the fact is, I mean, he took a lot of punishment in his fights. And like I said, I remember fights even with Juan Diaz, fights with Castanor, Marquez. Like, it was, every fight was almost a war. And then, you know, he was struggling with lesser opponents. His style of fighting was like that Gotti style that, you know, just a lot of times doesn't give you a long career.
Yeah, he did take a lot of head punches, too. He left his head wide open because he was always punching himself. But he never subscribed to that age-old tactic of always keeping one hand up by your face to block. And he wasn't the type of guy who had a lot of head movement back and forth. He would just come right in and stand right in front of you and trade. So it's not very favorable to a long career, unfortunately. Looks like we lost Tony.
And I guess that would just be his personality.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, hopefully it's a good thing. Hopefully he caught whatever problem he has in time. And that's that. Well, this time, Tony, Skype hung up on you, I think. Or you hung up on us.
I don't hang up. My phone sits on my desk. I don't touch it.
Well, this time I had a little call quality window pop up. That's the only reason I knew right away. So how was your call? I thought I had people, but I guess it was just you. Anyway, talking about something else that dropped out of the picture here. The Olympics, big story here. It's been everywhere. MMA guys are pissed. Wrestlers are pissed.
Okay, wrestling? I mean, I don't really follow amateur wrestling, but I'm pissed. That was basically one of the cornerstones of the original wrestling. But they're going to keep table tennis?
Right.
Aside from Forrest Gump, who really plays table tennis?
Well, you know, China, number one populated country in the world. You can't take that away from the Olympics.
Yeah.
They're adding golf
in
the Olympics, by the way, I heard.
Golf, yeah. Well, they're talking about bringing back baseball, too. I mean, I guess this slot has opened up a new slot, so it's not like they're going to just get rid of it and not have anything new come in. They're talking about bringing something else back in. I never realized baseball was gone. I was just wondering where it was in the last Summer Olympics, I think. But I can remember when there was baseball in the Olympics. It wasn't that long ago. But now they're talking about bringing that back. They're talking about all different kinds of sports that they might bring in. And they're even saying MMA might be brought in instead. But apparently this was based on all sorts of different factors. They might take a look at other sports, but basically the decision was made for the benefit of other sports and not because they had an issue with wrestling, apparently, is what the IOC spokesman said. It was a decision to look at the core sports, what works best for the Olympic Games. This was the best program for the 2020 Olympics. It's not about what's wrong with wrestling, but what is good for the Games. And reasoning to the report was an analysis of more than 36 criteria, including popularity, finances, tickets sold, and governance. And it's really weird because the Olympics have had wrestling since the first games in 1896. So for U.S. fans, wrestler Rulon Gardner is one of the most famous Olympic athletes in the last 20 years, thanks to his gold medal win in 2000. So it's that's one of those things that just doesn't make sense. And everybody's up in arms about it. So I think what's going to happen is they're going to end up putting it back because I think the ruckus that they've raised by doing this has gotten so many people connected to wrestling pissed off that you know, basically there's going to be riots in the streets at some point. It back. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know how to take, though. I mean, how much is it going to take for them to really reverse their decision? But I know Scott Casper, our former guest a few weeks ago, has been lighting things up in that area, interviewing all kinds of people about how pissed off they are about that. So he's on it, and there's already a petition, according to one of his latest posts. So don't think it's dead just yet. It, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, he will be back. Anyway, getting back to MMA, the second women's fight in UFC history is just under, well, the first one is just under 2 weeks away, but the second bout will be Miesha Tate, our former guest, and she's fighting another former guest in Kat Zingano. It was a wild, maybe 2 years ago at this point, but we interviewed Kat Zingano at least a year ago, probably longer than that, maybe back when we were just a podcast here, but I do remember the name. I mean, how can you forget somebody named Kat? But we had her on the show, and Miesha we had just a not too long ago, right after her loss to Ronda Rousey, and she was making her comeback. So, two former guests fighting each other on April 13th from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. And Zingano is undefeated. They're still calling her a prospect for some reason. I don't have her exact record in front of me, but I mean, if we interviewed her 2 years ago and she was a prospect then, I don't think she's a prospect now. She's fighting Miesha Tate. Whatever, I don't know where they get those labels. But it's going to be for the, well, it's not going to be for a title, but it's probably title eliminator. And it's going to follow the lead of Ronda Rousey as she debuts women's fighting in the octagon when she meets Liz Carmouche at next weekend's UFC 157 card in California. And it will also headline the show and officially inaugurate the 135-pound women's title. And Miesha Tate was very successful in Strikeforce, where she was champion after defeating Marlowe's Conan in 2011. And she had a famous armbar loss to Ronda Rousey less than a year later. Tate bounced back and defeated Julie Kedzie at Strikeforce Rousey versus Kaufman later in the year in what was judged as one of the best fights for all of 2012. As I said before, Zingano is undefeated record, has an undefeated record as a pro fighter. She's 7-0. And she's picked up wins over veterans Takeo Hashi and Raquel Pennington. And this is going to make her UFC debut. We didn't get to last week, another UFC story. Following a loss at UFC on FX7, Thiago Tavares tested positive for use of a banned substance that will result in a 9-month suspension from the sport.
Ouch.
Tavares returned a positive test for drostanolone, which is a very popular steroid to get bagged for. I think out of all the steroid busts, it's drostanolone and another olone that pop up the most. It's an anabolic steroid, and it was after his fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov in Brazil in January. And their UFC officials confirmed the test results in a press release. The positive test will result in Tavares being suspended for 9 months retroactive to the date of the fight, which was January 19th. And speaking of women's fighting, I think drostanolone was the same substance that Cyborg got busted with, Chris Cyborg. It's one of those very popular drugs. I think it's actually used in what they call cutting cycles, which I assume means weight cutting. I'm not exactly sure if that's the one or I'm thinking of another one. Anyway, Tavares lost the fight, so it's another one of those situations where, I mean, what does steroids really do to you?
Yeah, good point.
But on the other hand, another UFC on FX7 main event fighter got a therapy use exemption for testosterone replacement therapy in his fight against Michael Bisping. And there was rumors that were circulating saying that Vitor Belfort's drug test results were positive after that fight, but they were negative and did not include any presence of any performance-enhancing drugs, unless you consider testosterone to be a performance-enhancing drugs. But like Chael Sonnen, apparently he's been diagnosed with hypogonadism, or low testosterone. And the purpose of a medically administered TRT regimen is to allow patients with hypogonadism to maintain testosterone levels within a range that is normal for an adult male. And Belfort's testosterone levels were tested and remained in legal levels for the fight, and his usage was approved prior to the event taking place. So it just goes to show you, you know, the benefit, I guess, of this testosterone replacement therapy. We've seen Kale Sonnen compete at the top level with Anderson Silva on TRT, and now Vitor Belfort just demolishes Bisping on it. So it definitely seems to have an advantage to the person that can get approved for it. But I think the jury's still out on it. We'll see. I actually noticed on The Ultimate Fighter, it's another thing we didn't get to talk about last week, that Chael Sonnen, since deciding to move up in weight, has toned down the vitriol. And he's very, not necessarily courteous, but very laid back, very respectful of John Jones. He's actually came out recently and said that he thinks John Jones is a better fighter than Anderson Silva. I mean, that's like unheard of for to give that kind of a compliment to somebody he's about to fight. So, and I my theory was always that he was on too much testosterone, which made him that way. Made him so outspoken and full of himself. Which makes sense because, I mean, when people notice somebody like that, they're going to say, oh, he's full of testosterone. I mean, there's something to it. Obviously, if he's changed that much, it can't just be the UFC telling him, you know, you need to act this way and not do that stuff anymore. Because if you're naturally that way, no matter what anybody tells you, it's going to slip out. And on this show so far, we've had like at least 4 episodes now. Nothing's come out to make it look like, you know, he's going to ever go back to that attitude and that way of baiting people and insulting people. I mean, he's been more joking than anything, but it just doesn't seem to have any kind of serious, rivalry or anything with Jones. He's just a changed man.
Well, I can say maybe the show isn't over with yet, you know. So maybe there'll be some fireworks down the road. But I just loved his little bit of philosophy 2 nights ago when he was saying that, he said, if you're not prepared to put it on the line, be rather respectful about what you say about people. But if you're going to get in that cage and let it slam shut with the person you're talking about, then you can say anything you want. I like that.
Right. But it's a good opportunity here to talk about The Ultimate Fighter. And, of course, I was wrong, and I got baited and switched because, what I said, they did a little detective work, and it looked like after Uriah Hall's fight, somebody was going into the ambulance, and it was a black guy. Well, I think it still was a black guy going in the ambulance, but that wasn't the fight that they were showing. They were little Bane, and Uriah Hall was fighting Adam Sella, who was a late pick on John Jones's team, and it was a good matchup. It started out really well. I mean, it looked like Uriah Hall was kind of taking his time, not really fighting as hard and as strong as he could. But Sella was holding his own, and then all of a sudden, a spinning back kick came up and caught him. Right, it looked like right on the temple, and put him flat out to the point where he was making all kinds of noises, trying to breathe. Total knockout. And so it was such a knockout that it was actually kind of a good thing for Sella, because he came into the house this last week, and he's got the hospital robe on and everything, and he's telling everybody, I don't even remember fighting. I have no recollection of the fight at all. I don't have any pain. Nothing hurts. I feel great. And he went in and actually got Uriah Hall in the bathroom, and he's like, you know, oh, man, I wish you at least had a black eye or something, messed up eye.
That was the kind of knockout where you could tell that his whole brain short-circuited. because he was unconscious as he was standing. And it brought back memories to me of a heavyweight title fight back in March of 1980 with Big John Tate defending against Mike Weaver. And John Tate... Yeah, and you remember, I don't know if you guys have seen it on YouTube, but it was a fairly boring fight. I thought John Tate had average, you know, he had decent skills, decent power, kind of a workmanlike guy. And in the 12th round, I remember Weaver really rocked him, but I had Tate pretty much pitching a shutout. And I remember saying to the guy sitting next to me, I says, huh, wouldn't it be a miracle if Weaver can come out in these later rounds? Yeah, right. And then you remember that, the left hook from hell. And Tate just, it was like he'd been shot. And then he just collapsed. I mean, he didn't even try to brace his fall. He was out for quite a while. And then about 3 or 4 months later, he came back on the undercard of the first Leonard Duran fight in Montreal. And he was knocked out in an awful manner by Trevor Burbick. Trevor Burbick was in the 10th round. Tate was just staggering across the ring, and Burbick was running after him. It was almost cartoonish. And it just wrecked his career. And from what I understand, he ballooned up to about 400 pounds and really became a crackhead and died in a single car accident, you know. Now, I think Sella seems like he's got the right attitude to come back from this. So, I mean, hopefully he's not going to go down that path. But that...
Yeah, he had very good spirits. And I thought it was very compelling that Uriah Hall had a lot of respect for the game, to the point where he was apologizing as soon as he realized how bad it was. I mean, he kind of turned around with a smug look on his face after he nailed it, but as soon as he heard and saw the condition that Sella was in, he was like, sorry, man.
Yeah.
that was kind of interesting. Somebody goes to the hospital. I don't know whether it's after a fight or what happens, but somebody is going to be going to the hospital down the line, and they purposely made it look like it was going to be after that fight to throw us off. So I don't know when that's going to be, but they haven't shown that clip again, so it's almost like, you know, they got me on that one.
Yeah.
Definitely shaping up to be an interesting show. And actually, before we get off the air tonight, we're going to let you guys go about 20 minutes early because I'm going to play my interview with Bubba, who's fighting Bubba McDaniel.
Oh, this will be great. Yeah.
Fortunately, you guys won't be able to ask questions because you weren't on the interview, but it's a pre-recorded interview.
It'll be fun.
And it's pretty interesting, you know, because he talks about a little bit about how the show can be a great thing for you, and it can be a bad thing, because between the first and second weeks, he had some differing commentary from the outside world when those two different shows aired because of his attitude, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a much better format this year. It's had a couple pranks that they pulled in the last episode that pissed one of the guys off so bad that, he took it right into the fight. Talk about being pissed going into a fight. He flipped the guy off at the weigh-in that he was fighting Colin Hart this week. And his nickname is The Dick. So I guess you can expect it from him. That was actually given to him at casting. You listen to Dana White talking about it when he's about to fight his elimination fight. Somebody at casting gave him the nickname The Dick. So he's going up against this guy, Kevin Casey, who looked a lot better in this preliminary fight than he did in his first fight there in the house. And he didn't look like he had anything. He just totally gassed out in the first round almost.
Yeah, and I kind of thought that maybe in the first round Casey was strictly doing a jiu-jitsu thing, you know, trying to do a rope-a-dope. But as the fight went on, I got to thinking, well, maybe Casey just couldn't stop from being manhandled throughout the fight. And Colin just never tired.
He made the comment after the fight that he felt like he physically wasn't even there, which made sense because he didn't look like he was there.
Well, you know, all I can say is this is the chance of a lifetime. You're fighting in front of more people than you ever have. I just don't see how you can show up and just be out there somewhere where you need to be here. not out there.
And he was very self-conscious about his cut, too, which didn't really open up until the second round. But still, you know, he was...
Well, come on. I would tell him, forget about it. Just forget about the cut. This is a fight, okay? Just don't worry about it. I think sometimes you worry too much about something, you're going to make it happen.
Probably increased about tenfold from what it was when it started. That wasn't a new cut. I think it might have been a new cut that he got it from an elbow or a headbutt, I think he said it was. And that could throw a guy off, too. I mean, look at Tyson Holyfield, you know, where he bit his ear because he thought he was headbutting him on purpose. In your night, just getting a bad headbutt early on in the fight or even in the middle of the second round. But Casey didn't make any excuses either. That's what I like. I mean, I just didn't feel like I was there. That was his only excuse, which is, you know, as excuses go, it's just not really blaming himself or anybody else. It's just, geez, I don't know what happened.
Well, all these guys can do is stay with the team, try to help them train, and maybe get an alternate. Something comes up. I guess that's all they can look for now.
The only thing about that, though, is, to get that spot, you have to be in a competitive fight. And I don't think that fight was competitive enough for him to come back into the picture. But he could end up with a slot on the finale. You know, you never know there. That could be a possibility.
I mean, I'm not really sure what his strategy was, if he was just trying to play the guard game. And, you know, it seemed like he wasn't even able to try too many submissions. I mean, Colin just stayed on him so much like a Tasmanian devil. And I don't know. It's just a bad night for Casey.
Mm-hmm. And the show is actually, you know, the ratings keep going up little by little. So it's definitely something that the fans appreciate, the different format this year, a little bit more respectful, aside from a couple pranks here and there, like I said, and the disrespect at the weigh-in for this previous episode. But you get the feeling that they're trying to distance themselves from the type of incidents they've had in the past. Like, it was that, I think it was the first year on FX when Tony Ferguson flipped out because he got drunk and he was yelling at the one guy about his kid, you know, not seeing his kid, and just being just total douchebag to everybody in the house, to the point where, you know, his best friends wanted him in the house at one point. And, you know, he apologized up and down for it afterwards. But then, you know, when we talked to, I think it was Chuck O'Neill, a veteran of the Tough series, he mentioned, you know, they give you any alcohol that you want. I mean, it's not like they try to keep it away from you. They don't necessarily say go drink now, but you can whenever you want. So I think they don't necessarily encourage it, but it's like, you know, it's there if you guys want to get drunk and be hooligans. So I guess these guys are taking it seriously enough that they're not getting too drunk. But, you know, again, the show's not over yet. Very different this year from past seasons, where they're focusing not so much on what happens in the house, but more on what happens in training and the stuff in the house. It's not necessarily like adversarial stuff. It's kind of like innocent joking stuff. And they have a camaraderie that I haven't seen on any past Tough series. I haven't seen them all, but the ones that I've watched, I haven't seen that type of camaraderie, even between the competing teams. They all seem to get along and respect each other more than any other season I've watched. So I'm looking forward to it. And the interview that I did with Bubba McDaniel is actually going to be part of a feature article in Ultimate MMA Magazine next month. So if you see that in the bookstore where you are, pick it up and see my article in there, and it will actually be the first of many, hopefully. I'm going to be working on transcribing our interview with Duke Rufus from last week, and that's going to be my next article for them. So, it'll be looking good. I'll have some money to invest in the site, hopefully. Maybe even give you guys a little stipend. Take care of the wealth.
Well, I've got to see if I know how to use it.
What? What was that, Tony?
Did you say Skype?
No, stipend. payment.
I'm like, well, I got one. I don't know how to use it. Goddamn neck carry, man. I had it for, it wasn't more than 8 months or 9 months now. I still don't know how to use the goddamn thing.
Yeah,
he called me again. I'm telling you, when you put me on programs, I was talking to my friend today after we went in training. I was like, oh, yeah, using, like, PowerPoint and morphing them into the pictures and putting all this crap I do on Facebook and shit, like invitations and all that. Oh, I'm like an advertising genius. I actually installed some software into his computer. I was like, huh? I feel like I had a cool going thing on.
Yeah.
I think once you get the thing on and all hooked up, then I'm good.
Right.
But behind the scenes crap, I can't do.
Yeah, some stuff is harder than others online. I mean, I try to be able to do it all, but I recently, not too long ago, discovered a website called Fiverr, FIVERR.com. And there's all kinds of things people will do for you for $5. And last few weeks, I saw somebody that's willing to put your site on the first page of Google for $5. So SEO on my part went out the window. If I could get somebody to do it for $5. And it was, it did work. It was only for like a day, but I had the ZionSucks.com website was right under the two Zion's official pages for one day. So I bet that pissed them off for a little while anyway. Anyway.
You got to admit it was worth $5.
Yeah,
it was worth $5, right? There you go.
But getting back, as we mentioned her earlier, the UFC just officially cut ties with Tito Ortiz as her representative. And there was an interesting story this week about, you know, not only Randy Couture, but all the UFC people that used to be on the good side of the company who are now on the outs with the company. And Tito Ortiz is one of them now, because this whole thing with Cyborg Santos fighting Ronda Rousey, they're back and forth saying that they would think about it. They were going to do it. Now they're not going to do it. Apparently, they've decided that Santos would not be able to make the required weight cut without risking being able to be pregnant down the line and have kids. So they've decided they're going to take her talents elsewhere. They asked for a release. And apparently, that's pissed off Dana White a lot. And he's been talking a lot about they have such an on-again, off-again relationship, it's not much of a surprise. But they gave her the release, so who knows where she'll end up, but it's just not going to be across the cage from Ronda Rousey, unless Rousey decides.
Which is,
up.
Of course, the fight that everyone wants to see.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of shades of boxing now.
Well, it's just one of those things. They're gonna find, you know, you can't have a women's division in the UFC if you only have four fighters.
Yeah.
And they're gonna have to slowly develop it to the point where they're gonna be able to have competitive matches. But you know, it's very encouraging that they've at least brought in two other women. Although I think Misha Tate was bound there anyway. I mean, they were talking about once they signed Rousey, they didn't make it official, but Misha Tate knew to the point where she was tweeting about it that she was signed, but I guess they just didn't make it official right away. So,
well, I mean, assuming Rousey gets another first round armbar, you know, Cyborg was the exciting fight.
Yeah, but Misha, you know, she's learned a lot from that. She was for a while that injury, so. If she beats her opponent there, Kat Zingano, either one of them, actually, whoever wins, would be a great fight for Rousey. So
that's true.
I mean, where else do you go unless you sign other people? And if you sign other people, I mean, they're obviously not going to be that high on the totem pole if you've had only two women's fights. You know, you're going to have the winners fight each other. It's kind of guaranteed. But anyway, the Rousey versus Cyborg fight is officially off, so it's not going to happen. I think I mentioned this last week on Mikhail Kessler. That's Carl Froch said he's going to hang up his gloves if he loses to Mikhail Kessler in the rematch. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
I just asked a question. I got no response.
Oh.
Last week, I talked about he's going to retire to become Kessler, right? Did I mention that?
No, I don't think we got on that last week.
Okay. Well, Carl Froch has said he'll leave boxing. He does not beat Mikael Kessler in their rematch.
Woo!
We did. You know, I think we actually mentioned that after and I can't remember what I was saying. I was like, you know, they said a couple of years ago, he won the third fight. It was a very competitive fight. It was a good fight. But I think in that time, you know, Kessler's had the injury issue with his eye. He's since had, his first defeat. And I think now, Frost being the hotter fighter, being on more of a roll, Kessler being more inactive, I think Frost wins this fight by late round stoppage.
And fortunately, we have not had to run any stories about Muhammad Ali dying. So that was another story we kind of touched on last week. And it does appear that his immediate family was more correct than his brother. His daughter said that he's just fine, but his brother said he could die any day. We haven't heard much about him since then, so like it's about to be. But one story we kept trying to get to last week, but we never officially finished talking about, boxer Omar Henry, who died at 25 a couple weeks ago. He was 12-0-1, and he was supposed to fight on Showtime on November 16th, but didn't feel well. A few days before the fight, went to see his doctor and was diagnosed with stage 4 gallbladder cancer. He posted a series of heart-wrenching messages on his Facebook fan page in which he pleaded for prayers and support. And perhaps the most tragic was his January 9th post when he said he hoped to live to celebrate his 26th birthday on February 8th. And he fell just a week short of his goal. And that post from January was, "I got exactly less than 1 month left until my 26th birthday, February 8th. Hopefully I live to see it. I really have been getting a lot of support with kind words and prayers from all over the world. Thank you, and I will continue to fight for us." And after being diagnosed, he did a series of interviews with reporters from boxing websites in which he expressed optimism that he would survive the deadly diagnosis. In one interview, he said, "As of right now, I got a lot of mixed feelings. Overall, I feel blessed. I'm living right now, but I've been taking it one day at a time because it makes my head hurt and body ache to thinking too far ahead." In that same interview, he spoke of the odd twist of fate, reaching a major career goal, and then shortly thereafter learning he only had weeks to live. And he said, "I will find out tomorrow if I'm free of cancer or if I won't be here to see 2013. That's what they told me. Life and death has never come so close, especially since I was so close to the top and being close to the top of my career. I was about to headline Showtime at 25 years old in the prime of my career. Now I could literally be dead tomorrow, and this is the scariest thing I can think of. God has a purpose." And then Sunday, his most recent post, I guess, he thanked fans for their support. And he says, "I am fighting the fight of my life against the disease known as gallbladder cancer. While I'm in this current state, I am fighting with my family by my side, and I will not go down for the count. I'm a champion who has chosen to fight not just for myself, but for those whose faith is believing in what you can't see, and I will continue to fight and fight and fight until I knock this sickness out. Your love and support mean the world to me. Your prayers are prayers not only to me, but to others like me. Please be advised I am grateful for any and all support. In any kind of way, please inbox me. My family has continued to be by my side, and it's hard for them as well. I want to thank God for unconditional love and unconditional fans." And his family can be proud of the way he handled his fate and became an inspiration to others. Anybody coming down with cancer, but to be at the end of your career and then find out, it's just 25 years old, too. It's just definitely wish the best of his family. And always can be inspiration for others. A little bit about Rampage Jackson earlier, talking about his frustrations going into the fight against Glover Teixeira at UFC on Fox 6. I know this was a story I think we were going to try to get to a couple weeks ago, but I'm not sure if I ever talked about it. But he had made some comments about UFC lying about their pay-per-view returns. Apparently, they were giving the fighters one number, and then they're telling the press another number. And Rampage Jackson was a little bit outspoken about this. And I know one thing we didn't get to talk about after his last UFC fight was, I don't know if you noticed this, Tom, but they didn't interview anybody after that fight.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Yeah, very good point.
Not even Glover, who won the fight. So my concern was maybe they were thinking, wow, we don't want another Forrest Griffin and Tito Ortiz to happen.
Yeah.
Where Rampage gets on the mic and says some stupid stuff. But, you know, he's still got to say, he says, pay me the numbers that you tell the press. Don't tell me, oh, we sold this many. Then you tell the press, oh, we sold this many. But then I'm saying, hey, you only told me we sold 800,000 buys, but you told the press you sold 1 million buys. Then they say, oh, we just say that for the press. No, pay me what you told the press, because you're lying somewhere. You're either lying to me or you're lying to the press about the pay-per-view numbers. If they're doing it to me, I'm sure they're doing it to other fighters. Saito has headlined a lot of UFC fights, 7 pay-per-view events since joining the UFC in early 2007. So him not getting his fair share of the percentages, you know, that's a pretty big deal. Particularly his UFC 114 fight against Rashad Evans. So I don't know. I don't know whether to believe him or what to think of that, but it makes sense. It makes sense that they would tell the press a different number, and that would seem to be illegal if this is true. If they are lying to one of those parties, I mean, the press is obviously an innocent lie, more innocent lie than lying to the fighters, I guess. But if they're lying to the fighters, that's definitely got to be illegal. So if there's any truth to that, I would love to find it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, though. I really can't say that. It's pretty frustrating. The UFC Rampage back. But if he's not willing and he's getting paid as much as they say he's getting paid, you got to be pretty frustrated to walk away from that. And that would be one of those things that would really frustrate me. So I kind of believe that there's some truth to that. You know, he doesn't give any concrete facts to or records to point to corroborate it. So I don't know. Maybe I need to do some investigative reporting on that. UFC on FX, I believe. UFC on FX7. This is headed by Renan Pagato and Michael McDonald. And both of them only have one loss. Pagato, I think his loss came ages ago. One of his first fights. He's 29-1, and he's fighting Michael McDonald, who's 15-1. And that should be a pretty interesting fight. McDonald's been pretty dominant, and Pagato, his last fight, I think was his USA debut, if I'm not mistaken. He demolished Uriah Faber.
Yeah, he's a monster. Somebody's won's got to go. You know how they always say if they're undefeated, somebody's O's got to go. Somebody's one's got to go.
Yeah, someone's one's going to become a two.
Yeah.
Unless there's a tie.
What happens?
It's a two in a five-round fight. It has happened. It has happened, so we never know. Anyway, the guy who inspired me in a loss to never pursue MMA is also fighting, Herb Swanson, who's 18-5. And I decided that I never want to do MMA after I saw Jose Aldo take him out in, I think, like 18 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, with some vicious knees and punches. But he's 18-5. He's fighting Dustin Poirier, who's 13-2. And I haven't heard much from Cub Swanson. I'm not sure what his UFC record is, but I haven't heard much from him or about him since that since I saw him in that fight against Jose Aldo. So I'm not sure if he's been out for a while or if I just been in some other circuit or what's going on with him. But he is definitely going to be in an important fight here against a guy with just two losses and a real tough dude, Dustin Poirier. And we have an undefeated Jimmy Manua, who is 12-0. And he's going to be fighting Cyril Diabate, who's kind of a journeyman in the sport. He's 19-8-1. And I think he won his last fight. I think I remember seeing him in a pretty impressive win in his last fight. But he's been up and down. Then we have another undefeated guy. He's got one draw, but he's got 10 wins, no losses. Gunnar Nelson fighting George or Jorge. I'm not sure how you pronounce that one. Santiago, 25-10. So he has the experience factor, I guess, over Nelson. But I don't know much about either guy. And we have some, or at least one guy from Strikeforce, Ryan Jimmo. Fighting James Tahuna, 15-5. Should be an interesting one. Matt Riddle, 7-3. Matt Riddle is one of those guys, a very rare bird. He's fought all of his fights in the UFC. Fighting Shane Mills, who's 15-5. Riddle, 7-3. And we have...
Hey guys, can I interject something real quick?
Go ahead.
I got a very special friend of mine online. This is a little bastard that's probably responsible, well, not probably, that is responsible for my likely broken hand. A little curb that I was kicking the crap out of at the tree lot a few months ago when I missed his skinny ass and hit a pole. Now I'm back in the bag again. I did two nights of three rounds each. You know, I don't have my full power in my left hand back yet, but I'm on my way there. So, good friend Stevie Hines, he's online tonight, he's listening to us. Stevie, I'm going to kick the shit out of you when I see you tomorrow, and then me and you are doing karaoke tomorrow night. All right, guys, get off of what you got to talk about now.
All right. Tough guys. Tough guys do karaoke. That's how it goes, right?
That's right. I'm going to think you're going to have
to come back. I think I left off with Shane Mills, 15-5. Then we have Terry Etim, who's 15-4, fighting Rene Forte. Because there's a lot of tough guys out there named Rene. Anyway, I hope he doesn't take offense to that if he's listening.
What's in a name? Yeah.
Paul Sass, who's 13-1. Fighting Danny Castillo, who's 14-5. Here's a guy in a lot of Massachusetts fights. Had a nice history with the WEC. Josh Grisby is 14-4. Fighting Andy Ogle, who's 8-2 from Ultimate Fighter fame. And we have Stanislav Nedkov, another undefeated guy on this card. He's 12-0. Fighting Tom Watson, who's 15-5. And I don't think he's a psychic, so he has nothing on our column. last two fights, Vaughn Lee, 12-8, with one draw, fighting Motonobu Tezuka. Probably not pronouncing that right, but he is 19-5-4. And finally, we have Ulysses Gomez, who's 9-3, fighting Phil Harris, who's 21-10. And that is all I have. We are finally fully caught up with all the news. Not print, but to speak, I guess. Right. record most. Brain fart about last week's Friday night fights, but I know I watched them. I just forgot who was fighting, what happened.
WBA title. No shame in losing to a guy like Austin Trout. He's a hell of a fighter out there. Wolak is 26, or excuse me, Rodriguez is 26 and 6, 14 knockouts. He's only been stopped one time. That was by Jesse Feliciano back in 2007. He has taken on a gentleman. I've only seen him on the ESPN previews. Believe me, I am going to butcher this last name by the ruins of first name is George, I can get that right. And listen, Tadu Hanapa, Tadu Nahipa, looks like. He's 31-0, one draw, 23 knockouts. They were showing one of his knockouts on the ESPN highlights, hyping the fight. And it was pretty impressive. And then he looks like, you know, he's got that little cocky attitude and everything. So he's going to be fighting a tough guy. I mean, it looks like his last few opponents, he had a guy 18-8, 8-6, 7-1. Fighting a lot of fights in Oklahoma. A lot of times you get that Midwest circuit out there. He's from Lawton, Oklahoma. So you get that Midwest circuit. You know, you can have a record like 31-0 and really, you know, have fought guys with, like, really a winning percentage of, like, 30%. So, you know, is his record padded? Or is, you know, this going to be the nice stepping stone where we're actually going to be so impressed that we're going to be able to pronounce his name right? Yeah, that's tomorrow night. I'm probably going to DVR that because I won't be home.
I don't think it's this weekend. I forgot to mention last week. That wasn't in my notes, but it was on our blog. Edwin Rodriguez, a former guest of ours, is back in the Golden Gloves. Have you heard about this?
No.
There is a new promotion, sort of a Bellator tournament brought to boxing, but they are going to have basically a tournament between the best super middleweights in the world. Or, you know, so the ones that signed up, anyway, the best super middleweights that signed up for this tournament. And they're calling it, the promotion is called Golden Gloves. Sorry about that. What was the last thing you heard there, Tony?
Well, I was talking about the fight card tomorrow night on ESPN, and then I was going to break into the HBO fight card from on Saturday, which looks to be pretty interesting.
Well, I briefly mentioned the four-man, $1 million event here. Edwin Rodriguez versus Ezequiel Osvaldo Moderna. Rodriguez is 22-0 with 15 knockouts. Moderna is 19-0 with 13 knockouts. And this is going to be, let's see, what's the date on this? I think the finals are going to be July 13th. And this fight is going to be March 30th. And Zolt Erdaev, 33-0 with 18 knockouts, will be fighting Denis Krejcev, who's 12-1-1 with 8 KOs. And this is actually for the 168-pound, this the first fight, what's his name, Rodriguez and Moderna is going to be at 168 pounds. And the Krejcev versus Erdaev fight is actually going to be a light heavyweight fight. And the finals are going to have the winners meet at 171.5 pounds, right between the 168-pound limit and the 175-pound limit. So I was saying that that could be because they don't want the potential loss or loses to go on their records at their normal weight. But I'm not exactly sure why they did that. Also on the card, Gennady Golovkin will be fighting at Nobuhiro Ishida. And Sergey Rebchenko will battle Adriano Nichi. And it's being promoted by Ludabella, but there's no TV network signed up yet to broadcast it in the United States. You were saying the HBO card?
Yeah, Saturday night. Pretty interesting card.
Tom's back.
Now, we got Adrian Broner, who would be the next huge star out there. Adrian is 25-0, 21 knockouts. His last fight, he just absolutely demolished Antonio DeMarco. He went over Vicente Escapedo, destruction of Jason Litzau. I mean, he's been, one of the fastest rising fighters out there. A lot of guys want to see him beat because they don't like his cocky attitude. But that's what people are paying to see him, because it's either I want to watch him win or I want to watch him lose. Now, he's going up against a fighter by the name of Gavin Reeves, who's over from Great Britain. But he is 37-1 with one draw, 18 knockouts. His only loss was back in 2008, a 12-round stoppage. I know the name. I can honestly say I've never seen him fight. But he's coming over to the stage. It looks like right here he's never fought outside of New England, of the United Kingdom. It's going to be tough for him to come over here for the first time against a top-flight fighter like Broner. Now, another very, very interesting fight on the card is a guy that we actually, the first time we ever did a live feed and you and I did the commentary, Sakio Bika, one of the toughest hombres I think I've ever seen. 30-5, 2 draws, 21 knockouts. He is fighting a guy by the name of the name I'm not going to be able to pronounce, Sick Loka. Sakio, of his 5 losses, look at some of these fighters out there. Andre Ward, unanimous decision. Lucien Bute, unanimous decision. Joe Calzaghe, unanimous decision. At the time, 3 undefeated fighters. Sam Solomon by majority decision, which he avenged. Then his other loss was another undefeated fighter by the name of Jean-Paul Mendy, but he was disqualified because he knocked Mendy down and then hit him on the ground. We did the live feed when he fought Peter Manfredo a couple years ago, and he walked through Manfredo while stopping him in 3 rounds. Ika is not a fast guy. He's not flashy. But he's stronger than hell, and he's very durable. And what he does is he just breaks guys down with pressure. Now, the guy he's fighting, 25-0, 7 knockouts. I should say he's fought over. Looks like all of his fights have been in Montenegro, not a place I frequent that often.
You mean Montenegro?
Now, just a couple fights ago, one of the grad school
fighters.
Yeah, Montenegro. I don't know where that is. Okay, last round, 13-1-1, beat him a decision. Fight before that, 5-15. Two fights before that, 4-45. That was one of his seven stoppages, thank God. I don't know what's going to happen to him when he, you know, he looks like he was born in Serbia. I don't know what's going to happen to him when he ventures, you know, out of, you know, his comfort zone and he's fighting a tough, durable fighter like this, you know, in the United States. I'm going out on a limb here. I'm picking Beaker by a stoppage win. I mean, I could be wrong, believe me.
That sounds like a smart pick.
I have a tough feeling on this one. Also, we got Bernard Hopkins' nephew, Demetrius, on the card, 32-2, 12 knockouts. He's fighting Charles Whitaker, who is 39-13 with knockouts. So, you know, you got an interesting card here. Well, I wish I would have known about this more in advance. I might have got tickets to go down to it. Rashay Warren's on the card. He's fighting a four-rounder. He's 2-0, zero knockouts. You know, he just started his pro career after the Olympics over the summer. A highly talented amateur fighter, so we're going to see how he does with the pros now. So, I mean, just an overall good little fight card in Atlantic City.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we're going to switch over to our Bubba McDaniel interview. And, Tom, you actually have to stay on the line until it finishes because we have to go into extended time. So I hope you don't mind.
No problem.
All right. So I think that's what the key is. As long as you're connected, we get extra time because last
week...
I'm
the man.
We got thrown off. So it's all up to you.
Okay, I'm here. Let's roll.
If you hear the countdown,
stay on. I'll talk to you guys next week, man.
All right.
Okay, Tony.
I'll see you, Scott.
Till next week.
All right, you later. Come with Tornado.
Adios.
By the way, happy Valentine's Day.
Yes.
I put a picture on my Facebook page of two adjoining tornadoes making a heart.
Aww. Actually, funny story about that. You know, I'm a lumberjack, and of course, we cut down a dead tree today, and the trunk happened to be in the shape of a heart. So, my coworker took a slab of it home to the girlfriend. Unfortunately, I'm not dating right now, so I couldn't take a slab of myself to anybody. It's pretty interesting. You know, it just happens to be on Valentine's Day. We cut down a tree in the shape of a freaking heart. Weird. Anyway, here's Bubba. No, Bubba McDaniel. A different guy. This is several weeks ago.
No, I'm doing okay. Finished up the fight like another in Ohio. All right.
All right. I'll try not to take up too much of your time. Get back to it.
First question now, what did you enjoy most about the Ultimate Fighting Show? Enjoyed the most. Honestly, just getting to know the new people around, you know, that were in the sport. Thank you.
Outside of that, and overall, park, but you know, if I do. I'm going to go out there.
trying to get comfortable with the fight. You know, I'm one of those guys that overanalyze everything for the first few days. And once I'm comfortable with something, that's what I want to do. You know, all that stuff that you want, but, you know, any guy that was there saying that they didn't want the best road to them to the final is a liar.
Frozen went to go to Cincinnati on a